Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sacrifice by Addison Jane. Narrated by Aaron Shedlock and Anastasia Whatley. Prologue. Hawk. My feet scuffed the church floor, unable to keep up with the frantic pace of my father and uncle as they dragged me down the aisle. Widened eyes, some in horror, some in shock and awe, filled the pews on either side of us, all watchers desperate for front-row seats to my demise. I knew because I'd once been one of them, eager to watch the vulgar ritual, knowing it would give me nightmares, but desperate to experience something so foreign, so forbidden. Something other than the mundane existence I'd been handed. Maybe that was my mistake. Maybe it was a sick addiction to sin that had forced me into the position I now found myself in, being forced to pay for them. We jerked to a stop a few feet from a small stage constructed from old pieces of wood with a base of bricks. It was made to be removed. It was there to make sure everyone in the procession could get a look at the show they were about to put on, but it could be taken down quickly and disposed of, so they had deniability if anyone came asking questions. That kind of disgusting bullshit came with practice, because I wasn't the first, not by far. I was simply the latest, today's lesson in obedience. My people, the murmurs of the crowd instantly halted at the sound of Prophet Andrew's booming voice. You should have listened, my father whispered under his breath, his fingers pinching at my skin. You should have done what you were told. There was almost a catch in his voice, a sign of emotion I rarely heard from the man I shared nothing with but DNA. I was number 14, the 14th of 37 children he had fathered. With 7 wives, he spent 1 night a week in each of their homes, because that was what a man did here. He collected wives like trophies, and the main aim was to produce children, in the hope that one of them would turn out to be the chosen one, the one sent to save us, the one who has the key to the gates of heaven. Did I believe it? Did I believe our eternal happiness was dependent on a child being born with a perfect, cross-shaped birthmark? I honestly wasn't sure what I believed now. All I knew was that the Chosen One wasn't me. Bring them to me, Prophet Andrew ordered, his hand reaching for the cloth covering a large square object on a stand beside him. He tugged the cover off, a dramatic reveal followed by a wave of gasps moving through the church, echoing in the vast space. My body unconsciously jerked away from the slithering knot of snakes crammed into the glass box. It was a natural reaction when seeing a dangerous creature, self-preservation taking over, and screaming, "Run!" But there was no escape. My father and uncle tightened their grip, yanking my frightened body onto the unsteady stage. Taylor Noble, you are here today because you have questioned the teachings of the valley. I glanced back over my shoulder, noting that my younger brother Isaac sat in the front row, his head bowed, refusing to meet my gaze. I trusted you, I screamed at him, knowing he was the reason I was there. He had gone to Prophet Andrew after I confided to him about the questions I was beginning to ask. My own flesh and blood, my brother. Not only that, Prophet Andrew announced a little louder, but you have been spreading the same lies amongst your siblings and other members. I think we have different opinions on what constitutes a lie. A sharp blow to the back of my knees forced them out from underneath me, and I landed with a hard, painful thud. I gritted my teeth, refusing to let Prophet Andrew see the pain on my face. I knew it would give him pleasure. It always did. He wasn't the only prophet in the valley. There were 3 altogether. But Andrew always dealt out the punishments. It was like you could see pure joy fill any time you could order a beating or some kind of sick ritual that I was almost sure he made up. Say what you will, Taylor Noble, he continued with a scowl, though the corner of his mouth twitched. We will let the snakes decide whether your heart is with the valley or whether you are unsavable. He nodded to the tank of deadly serpents, and a man wearing thick gloves stepped up beside it, reaching in and grabbing a snake in each hand, tugging them from the writhing mess. Don't struggle. Don't fight. Keep your heart rate low. This was the test. If the snake bites killed me, I was a sinner. If I somehow miraculously survived, it was God's will for me to be here. Had I ever seen anyone survive? No. My father and uncle stepped back, leaving me kneeling at the prophet's feet while the man with the snakes advanced. My heart wanted to race, run, and scream in fear, but I knew the more I panicked, the faster my veins would force the poison through my body, and the quicker I'd die. It is time. It was almost like the snakes heard Prophet Andrew's words, like they understood, because they both lurched from the handler's gloves, each with their own aim focused on my right arm. Their fangs sunk into my skin, and for a second I felt nothing. The shock protected me for a single moment, but it couldn't protect me forever. I wasn't prepared for the scream that burst from my mouth. The pain was so excruciating and overwhelming that I had no power over my body's response to it. My breathing was short and sharp, and my arm felt like it was on fire. The snakes finally withdrew, but my arm did not feel lighter with their absence, as it had been pumped full of venom. I wrapped my fingers around my arm above my elbow and squeezed, trying to keep the poison from pumping into my body, ultimately stopping my heart. I was so focused, so determined to fight the odds and win, that it took me a moment to notice the chaos that had erupted behind me. Booming voices, doors slamming, and screams from the pews had my head spinning. Hysteria. Around me. Inside me. Enough! The deep roar of his voice felt like it could have lifted the ceiling. It was otherworldly. And, for a second, I wondered whether the poison had already begun to alter my perception of reality. The second time he spoke was much clearer. It had been a long time, but I knew his voice. I had heard it before. I'm taking the kid. You have no authority here, Prophet Andrew screamed back, though there was a slight shake in his tone. My consciousness was fading, whether from the toxic wave infecting my bloodstream or my body simply going into shock because of the pain. I didn't care. I welcomed the darkness. The end of a life where I'd spent my days praying to a god I didn't believe in, watching my sisters forced into marriages with men twice their age, and being compelled to work hard labor, only to hand over every cent we earned to the prophets. A life where I'd been beaten more days than not. I'd like to see you try to stop me, the godlike voice growled. With the last ounce of strength in me, I looked over my shoulder, catching a glimpse of the wall of bodies that filled the open doors of the church, a blur of leather, tattoos, and denim. One moved toward me, but I struggled to focus, unable to make out anything but the advancing shadows, everything that represented the devil. Come on, kid, he murmured, scooping my body into his arms and walking out with me as Prophet Andrew screamed something unintelligible. Hang in there. Don't give up yet. Was this him? Was this it? Was I in hell? Because if it was really hell, then why did I feel so at home? Chapter 1. Hawk.
You're late.
I reached for an empty plate, only to be slapped on the back of my hand with a bright pink spatula. The sharp sting had me jerking back, crinkling my nose at my baby cousin, Calliope. I've been down a back road, helping them finish shit. For extra impact, I scuffed my hand through my hair, letting dust sprinkle out onto the floor. The club's new sports bar was still very much under construction. I'd spent the last 4 hours or so sawing, hammering, and sanding, so it would be ready for the painters to come in a couple of days. Most of the boys were down there helping because the place was meant to be opening in 3 damn weeks. Callie huffed loudly and rolled her eyes at me across the table.
You gonna clean that up?
You gonna force your favorite cousin to starve?
You're an asshole.
I'll take that, I answered, grabbing a clean plate, this time without being assaulted. An asshole was far from the worst thing Callie had ever called me, though the way her shoulders sagged and a smile finally formed reminded me that it was all in love. Now, can I eat? I'm fucking starved. She pointed the pretty pink spatula at me.
You're late again next week, and I'm feeding your share to the dog next door.
Yes, ma'am. She'd say the same thing again next week when I was late, and the week after that, too. Sunday lunch had been a thing since well before Bishop, my uncle, an exiled 8MC president, showed up at the valley and rescued me. Bishop's old lady Lucy had been doing it since the two of them had what Bishop thought was a one-night stand 20 years ago, only to find her feeding his brothers the next morning. He always said when it came to women, and you knew she was it, you fucking knew. And he never let her leave, at least not willingly. A heart defect she'd had since she was a baby eventually caught up with her, and 10 years ago it finally gave in. I watched Bishop almost give in, too. If it hadn't been for Calliope, he just might have. The kid was only 7 when she watched her mom die. We buried Lucy on a Sunday morning, and Callie was in the kitchen that same day, continuing the legacy her mom left behind. "Where's your dad?" Callie pulled another tray of cookies from the oven, placing them on the counter.
"He's out the back. There are some guys out there I haven't met before," she answered, now far more focused on the feast she was preparing, though it didn't stop the visible shudder that moved down her spine. "The big one creeps me out."
I paused with my plate full, a deep frown knotting my brow. Calliope grew up with a group of the hardest, scariest fucking men around. It took a hell of a lot to rattle her. My brothers were scattered through the house, some out front eating on the porch and others in the dining room down the hall. I grabbed a beer from the fridge before heading out through the living room and down the hallway to the back door, the chorus of unfamiliar laughter leading me. Several sets of eyes looked up as the screen door slammed shut behind me, and there was silence for a second before Bishop waved me over. "I was wondering when you'd fucking get here." I eyed the other guys at the table as I slipped onto the end of the long bench. I wanted to get some shit finished before I left the construction guys to it. "Bishop was saying you're a bit behind," the largest guy announced, looking at me like we were good friends. "You want some great work done? I've got a cousin who can do it in half the time for half the price." "And I've got a cousin who can swallow a whole banana without gagging, but I don't get him to suck my di—" "Hawk, this is Robert," Bishop interrupted me casually, gesturing to the largest of the men with a fork loaded with mashed potato. "He and his boys are going to be doing security at the bar when we open. Robert, this is Hawk, my VP and nephew." He thrust his hand across the table, as if I would take it and welcome him to the family with a pat on the back and a high five. Instead, I looked at it for a second before turning my attention to my food. It took him a few seconds, but eventually he withdrew his handshake offer and played it off with a laugh. "When you're hungry, right?" I filled my stomach, listening to the bastard rattle on for another 10 minutes about the people he knew, the skills he had, and how fucking lucky we were to have him. I kept eyeing Bishop out of the corner of my eye. For a man who didn't put up with any bullshit, he was surprisingly okay with this loudmouth asshole and his tall tales. "I've got shit to do," Bishop finally announced when Callie stepped outside. If you were a man and not a part of the club, you weren't allowed within 10 feet of Bishop's baby girl. "I'll get the club lawyer to write up some contracts, and you can come in and sign them next week." Robert grinned across the table at us, his round face lighting up. "Sounds fucking great," he responded, thrusting his hand across the table again. Bishop shook it, and the men both got to their feet. "Well, I think this will be the start of a great working relationship." I sat back in my seat, refusing to get up and acknowledge him with more than a narrow glare. "I'm sure it will be," Bishop answered with a nod, looking up at Robert. The first time I'd seen him ever look up at anyone. At 6'2" with a body like a linebacker, Bishop wasn't a tiny man. Robert, though, dwarfed him by about 6 inches and 200 pounds. Hence the reason he and his team had just been offered the job of security for the Exiled 8's new sports bar. "I'll get someone to call you when the contracts are ready." "I'll see you both real soon," Robert responded, his gaze turning to me. "Hawk." I offered him a sharp nod. That was all he was getting. Much to Bishop's amusement, my president falling into his seat with a smirk as Robert waddled back through the house. "You didn't like him?" "What was there to like?" I threw back with a snort. "He's big." "And fucking stupid," I finished for Bishop. It wasn't an understatement. During his spiel about how awesome he was, he'd rambled on about how he had trained himself to sniff out police officers, just like a fucking drug dog. And I wasn't about to relive the way he spoke about how irresistible he was to women because they saw him as this giant teddy bear. "Stupid to you might be a negative, but to me, It just means easier to control and too dumb to try and fuck with us. Bishop explained, reminding me once again why he was the damn president. That was in his blood, and I guess mine too. It gave me something to be proud of, something to fight and stand for, those things I thought at one point in my life I'd never have. Bishop didn't only save me from dying that day, he gave me something to fucking live for. Bishop? Hawk? We both looked up at the same time. Chase, one of the club prospects, stood in the doorway. I couldn't tell if he looked nervous or was fighting a smile and trying to hide it with the back of his hand. I think you guys need to come out here.
Chapter 2. Missy. Stones crunched under my heavy boots as I climbed the steep driveway. Sweat gathered at my hairline. I blamed the heat of the Michigan summer sun, ignoring the complimentary butterflies stirring in my belly, signaling I was nervous about the shitstorm I was possibly about to start. Four or five men lazed on the expansive porch of the three-story house, beer bottles in their hands. Cold beer bottles. Moisture dripped from them as the frosty liquid inside fought against the humidity. The tattoos, piercings, and beards that decorated each of the men screamed, "Get the fuck out and don't come back." Everyone who lived within a 50-mile radius knew this was one house in the entire city that should be avoided at all costs. The house itself was large and old, but was well-kept, with nice gardens, tended potted plants, and what could have been a fresh lick of beige paint. But it wasn't the place itself that had my hands shaking. It was what you might find here, and whether or not it was worth the beating you'd most likely get for showing up uninvited. Yet here I was, on a mission to let one fucking asshole know that he shouldn't have messed with me or mine. Consequences be damned. One set of eyes after another turned my way, each with their own personal reaction. Some confused, some surprised, and even a set that seemed nothing but eager to see what was about to happen. Either way, though, their eyes all started low with a show of appreciation, because my knee-high black suede boots and Daisy Dukes were sure to grab any guy's attention. I had great legs. I worked damn hard for this body, and it was the reason my daughter and I had a roof over our head. Missy? Drew was quick to leap from his seat, his brow knotted between his eyes as he raced down the few porch steps, his hand trailing the banister. What the hell are you doing here? Just the motherfucker I was looking for. You should have walked away, I spat, the confused look on his face like an accelerant fueling the fire in my belly. What the hell are you talking about? He threw his hands in the air while continuing to walk forward. When he got close enough, I reached over my shoulder and slid out the baseball bat that I tucked back there. In one swift move, I pulled it back and swung at the bastard's knee. The hard thud mixed with his pained scream as he dropped to the ground were like a symphony. I wished I could record it and play it on repeat. Several clicks came from above me, the unmistakable sound that every gun owner knew. The safety was off. Those guns were ready to shoot, and they were now aimed at my head. You crazy bitch! Drew screamed as he rolled around on the ground, clutching his knee. Fucking pussy. It wasn't even broken, probably not even dislocated. I hadn't swung that hard. There would definitely be a bruise on it tomorrow, though. Drew and I went way back, at least 10 years. He was my ex Jared's best friend when Jared and I had started dating. I got pregnant and walked out on the cheating bastard, raising my little girl basically on my own, with her visiting her father one weekend a month, only because it was court-ordered. Jared and Drew had a falling out a little over a year ago, and to be honest, I was kind of glad. With Drew joining the MC, it was one less dangerous criminal to have hanging around my child. Drew and I had never had any real issues. Not until yesterday, when I picked up Katie from Jared's and she wouldn't stop crying. Then he walked out with a black eye and split lip and told me how he'd run into Drew down the street, and the little shit for brains had decided to pick a fight with him. In front of my child, my 4-year-old daughter, who was now traumatized.
There a problem here?
A deep voice questioned, the gravelly tone tickling across my skin, leaving a wave of goosebumps in its wake. It was almost enough to make me look up, but first I had something I needed to say. I took a step forward, so I was standing over Drew, the dickhead, who was still crying like a bitch, not caring that there were now probably 6 guns pointed at my head. Listen to me, you pathetic piece of shit. I don't give a damn what problems you have with my ex. He's not exactly my favorite person in the world either. But if you ever again decide to express those feelings with your fists in front of my daughter, I'll come back here with a rusty knife and castrate you in your sleep. Then I'll shove your balls so far up your fucking ass you'll be able to taste them. Drew stared up at me with his eyes wide. His pain was suddenly an afterthought. It wouldn't be the first time I'd threatened to hurt him, and it probably wouldn't be the last, because Drew was an asshole. Why he and Jared weren't still good friends stumped me, because they were like 2 peas in 1 screwed-up pod. Jesus Christ, Drew! A female voice groaned loudly, surprising me. I looked up to see a young woman with long blonde hair dancing in the breeze, staring down at the injured man in disgust. To my surprise, there were no guns pointed at me anymore, and half the men were still glaring, but it wasn't at me. Hawk, you're not actually going to let him get away with that, are you?
It looked to you like he got away with it?
The gravelly voice responded, drawing my eye to a striking specimen of a man who was leaning against the banister at the bottom of the stairs, his arms folded across his chest. Our eyes met, and the deep emerald green that shone back at me almost stole my breath. He held my gaze as he spoke, which was intimidating on its own.
One of you bastards drag him around the back before I let her have another go at him.
My grip tightened on the bat, the small movement not going unnoticed, and drawing the corner of his mouth up. 2 men jogged down the stairs, and each took one of Drew's arms, dragging him off the road and onto the grass, not even apologizing when he screamed at the movement of his leg. Okay, maybe it was a little more than bruised.
I didn't get your name?
Mr. Green Eyes questioned, with his arms folded across his chest. I couldn't help but be distracted for a moment by the decorative barbed wire tattoo, as if it was wrapped around his fist. I didn't give it to you.
I'd like to know it.
Then ask bitch boy, I snarled, nodding in the direction they dragged him, actively trying to avoid eye contact with the gorgeous-looking man in front of me.
How old is your daughter?
I clenched my teeth and wiggled my nose, fighting tears that burned my eyes as I remembered the look on Katie's face, how frightened she'd been, and how it had crushed her to see her father hurt. She knew he wasn't perfect, and hell, there were times when she didn't want anything to do with him, when she questioned whether he even gave a shit about her. But that was her dad, and she still loved him. So to see him attacked and hurt, it was scarring. 4, I growled, before shaking my head and reminding myself to get the hell out of there as the adrenaline began to fade, and I suddenly realized exactly what I'd done, and to who. Tell him to stay the hell away from my family. Green Eyes narrowed, flicking toward the rear of the house for a blink before returning to me.
I'll pass the message along. I'm sure Drew and I are gonna have a great talk about what's acceptable and what's not.
It was a casual statement, but the way his hands curled into fists let me know that his intentions included more than merely a chat. With reality beginning to settle in, I took a step backward, returning to the stone driveway. He followed, meeting me step for step as I backed away. Next time, I won't be bringing a bat, I warned, my heart leaping up into my throat when he let out a deep, rumbling chuckle. And I won't be aiming for his damn leg.
Baby,
he started, The smooth term of endearment that I'd slapped other men for using suddenly felt and sounded so incredibly different. It sent this surge of electricity shooting through me. Not the bad kind, though. More like the kind you get with firsts. The first time he touches your skin. The first time you kiss. The first time the words, "I love you," fall from his lips.
If there is a next time, I promise you, by the time you get here, the fishes will already be enjoying their lunch.
The tone of his voice was almost angry, maybe protective? I couldn't help but shake my head, trying to clear the air around me and get my senses back. "Call me baby again," I started with a soft smile, "and the fishes will also be getting dinner." I lifted my bat, pointing it straight at him and throwing him a wink, not bothering to wait for his reaction before turning and hightailing it the 30 or so feet to the road where my run-down car was parked. When I turned the key and the engine started the first time, I swear my entire body sunk into the seat. I'd just threatened more than one member of the exiled 8MC. Men who I'd heard made people go missing for far less. Who the hell did I think I was? Oh yeah, a mom. The picture of Katie that sat proudly on my dashboard had me sucking in a deep breath, my shoulders rising and falling dramatically. This kid was my world, and I'd do anything and more to protect her, to show her she was safe and loved. And I did just that. But as I pulled out from the curb and caught sight of the biker standing at the roadside watching me drive away, I had this feeling that this wasn't the end of it, and he wasn't about to just let me walk away. I simply didn't know if my heart was suddenly pounding because that scared the crap out of me, or because it didn't.
Chapter 3. Hawk. My fist hammered on the red wooden door. The still night air was cool, with a slight edge to it, despite the fact that we were getting pretty damn close to summer. This side of town was so damn quiet. A nice change of pace from the busier streets of Detroit. And yet, I'd still rather be there than in this shithole, dealing with some stupid motherfucker who decided to screw with one of our clients. "I'm coming, I'm coming," the male voice called from inside, a deep, raspy cough following and growing louder as he got closer to the door. I clasped the weapon in my hand a little tighter, my finger curling around the trigger as I raised and leveled it at where the door was about to open. One lock, two locks, three, before the handle finally turned and the door cracked open. "Can I help? Fuck!" He tried to slam it closed, but I raised my foot and pulled it back, ramming my heel into the cheap piece of shit and almost cracking the damn thing in half. Adrian stumbled back, hitting the wall for a second in a stunned state before he lifted his hands, his head shaking back and forth. "Hawk, man, come in!" Shoving what was left of the door to the side, I stepped through, Drew and Blue right behind me. I wasn't one of those assholes who sent their entourage in first. Instead, I handled whatever I could fucking handle with my fists or the bullets of my goddamn gun. "I don't have the money," Adrian protested. He knew exactly why I was there because, unfortunately, it wasn't the first time I'd had to visit his dumbass. "You gotta give me some time." Shaking my head, I stepped inside the run-down apartment. There were holes in the walls, stains on the carpet and trash pushed into corners. Oh, and the smell? Last thing I wanted to do was come down to this fucking dump just for you to tell me you don't have the money, I ground out, dodging a pile of trash that looked like it was damn well moving. I don't have the time for that. I really didn't. I had shit to do that didn't involve this dirty bastard and his inability to know when to stop ticking up shit he couldn't afford. Bad for him, good for us. The club had been debt collecting for the past 3 or 4 years. We bought debt from businesses at lower than the amount owed, then added what we like to call tax on top of the original amount. It could be a gamble, given there was never any guarantee we would get our money back, but there was one difference between us and other debt collection agencies. They have to follow the law. I find there are other, far more productive means. Hands shaking, Adrian reached for a lit cigarette sitting in an ashtray and drew it to his lips.
I honestly don't have anything. I don't.
He took a long, deep inhale of nicotine.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?